Les colloques du Collège de France.
So, Professor Merit Sijbrandij is professor of clinical psychology at the Vrije Universiteit in Amsterdam. She's the director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Center in Amsterdam. Her research revolves around the prevention and treatment of mental disorders following trauma and adversities in a global context. And she has performed randomized controlled trials in the field of prevention and treatment of PTSD and other common mental disorders. And she'll talk about scalable interventions in this area. So tying together a little bit of digital interventions and clinical work.
Thanks a lot, Maria, and thanks everyone to be here still in this very hot afternoon here in Paris. Yes, thank you. So I'm Marit Sijbrandij. I'm working at the Vrije Universiteit, Free University of Amsterdam, and also work a lot together with WHO because we have a formal collaboration with them. Well, this morning we've already seen some of the pictures here. I think you presented even a more recent picture of all the people in the world, unfortunately, having a mental disorder. It's 1 in 8. This is an older number, but it's over a billion of people worldwide currently having a mental disorder. But sad news is that most of these people do not get any form of mental health care. For example, 71% of people with psychosis, which is not the, which is one of the more severe types of mental disorders, do not receive any form of mental health services, particularly in low middle income settings where resources for mental health care are very limited. And 80% of all people live in low middle income settings. So even though maybe the percentages of mental disorders are slightly lower in low middle income settings, because there are some geographical disparities, basically, absolutely, most of the people with mental disorders do live in these low middle income settings. And one of the reasons that access to mental health services, so the mental health gap is so big, is that only 2% of health budgets on average are spent on mental health. Not because people don't want that, but also because budgets in general are very limited. And of course, that's also a reason why in a lot of countries we have a parallel health system, a lot of NGOs that jumped into this void and actually offer mental health care as part of their services. But you also know that since last year, also a lot of budget cuts, particularly from the US, have been done in terms of US aid. So this is all very bad news. We did a study ourselves among Syrian refugees in the Netherlands and also in Turkey, which is refugees particular is a vulnerable group, vulnerable for mental health symptoms, refugees and migrants in general. But they also are very sadly known for not having good access to mental health care. So refugees, migrants in general, are much less likely to receive mental health care. This is also something that is a robust finding from, for example, register studies in Denmark and in Sweden. They access mental health care much less than, for example, the native Swedish population, except maybe for post-traumatic stress disorder and for anxiety disorders, but for all other disorders, they have less use of these services. We found that in Turkey, in Istanbul, in an area where approximately 30,000 Syrian refugees were residing in the around 2019, we found that 88 to 90% of people with a mental health condition did not get any form of mental health care. We did the same study with exact the same outcomes in the Netherlands. It looked a little bit better, but still 40 to 60% of people did not access any form of mental health care, people with a likely diagnosis. So what can we do then? Well, the word has already been dropped. We have to have scalable interventions. And what is scalability? Well, and what can we? How can we scale, actually? Well, we can learn a lot from a company here, IKEA, we call it, or IKEA. You can actually scale products, right? And what is scalability? So scalability is about having good enough products, maybe not perfect products. So the product that Eric was presenting on, I think that's the perfect product. That's psychotherapy for established diagnosis. But maybe if we can redesign them a little bit, make them a little bit more modular, perhaps more standardized, we can make them still keep them in a good enough shape. But you do, of course, need very clear and very precise manuals, also something IKEA developed for their furniture. And you do not need any skilled or highly trained personnel anymore. You don't need bespoke furniture. You can just put it on a Saturday afternoon, use a screwdriver yourself, try to screw the whole thing together. You notice one screw is missing, of course. You call the IKEA and then you say, okay. They say, no, it should be in it. Then you look under the couch. You get a lot of fights with your husband or your wife. And then in the end, everything is standing there. Your Billy bookcase is there. And you're very proud of that, right? And this is also alluded to as the IKEA effect. People tend to attach more value. This is a social psychology finding, quite a robust finding, by the way, that people tend to attach more value to things they actually actively contributed to, so that they made themselves. So I was thinking, well, maybe that's already what we do in psychotherapy. We give people homework exercises. They have to practice things outside of sessions. But maybe also because of when you engage the community, when you involve people with lived experience or peer helpers, that also is a way of getting communities more engaged and having, more positive attitudes towards the product, the therapy. Basically, if you would like to scale up psychological interventions, there are two main strategies. One of them is task sharing, which is a meaning that you would then transfer tasks of specialists, like psychiatrists, psychologists, to non-specialists. The other thing is digital interventions. So you just scale up with a smartphone or online interventions. And we have heard this really lovely presentation of you on this matter. So in terms of task shifting means delegation of specialist tasks to non-specialist helpers. So it means that actually these non-specialists, they are going to carry out real psychotherapy. They're not doing, for example, like buddy programs or psychosocial interventions or social programs. No, it's really meaning the content of real psychotherapy is actually being delivered by these lay helpers. And they could, for example, be community health workers, people who would otherwise give vaccinations to children at home, nurses, primary care providers, village health workers, alternative care providers, or religious healers, for example. Really beautiful studies have been done in Nigeria with religious healers providing task-sharing interventions. And, for example, also lay people from the community that we, for example, trained in the Netherlands, like peer refugees. But for example, in the Netherlands, there's also a project now with hairdressers. They're training hairdressers to deliver psychological interventions because maybe instead of talking about, well, where are you going to do on holiday this year, you can also talk about, what are your main concerns. Really interested to know what's coming out of that, but something to follow. Task sharing has been, it's not something new or very innovative. It has already been done a lot across all medical fields. It has been found to be effective also in somatic healthcare, very effective in addressing perinatal mental health in high-income settings. Big meta-analysis has been done. And also a colleague of mine from my university did a big study with individual patient data on task sharing in low- and middle-income countries and found it to be beneficial for depression. So a lot of efforts have been put into task sharing. The other thing is the digital interventions. That's the other big group of studies that have been done or interventions that have been developed to scale up massively across settings. In my university clinical psychology department, we have this big database containing all the mean standard deviations of all psychotherapy trials that have been done. You can access it. It's an open access database. Anyone can do a meta-analysis. It contains tools, R tools, etc. So if you want to check yourself whether these data are correct, you can do that. But together with a colleague, we found that digital interventions are also effective for common mental disorders, also in low middle income countries, which is interesting because particularly in low middle income countries, the use of digital technology is really sharply increasing. And also the coverage and the the access to broadband internet is rapidly getting better there. So in terms of task sharing, so there are a couple of different programs that have been developed over the last 20 years, 15 years, for example, by Vikram Patel at Harvard University, but also a very famous intervention on perinatal mental health, where lady health workers in Pakistan, is from Atif Rahman by, at the University of Liverpool, were offering task sharing interventions to women with perinatal depression. These are the more the early studies, but showing really good effects. Based on that, WHO decided that they also wanted to develop their own manuals for delivery of task sharing programs. So they developed the PM Plus manual, and that was just when I decided to do a volunteership at the WHO in 2013. I went there, and coincidentally at that time they had just developed this manual, and they needed someone to write the protocol for the studies they were doing on that. So PM Plus is a very brief intervention. It's short, it's 5 sessions only. It's very highly protocolized. You can download the manual from the website of the WHO. It's freely available. I think there's also a French version of it. There's Arabic versions, there's multiple languages. It's transdiagnostic, so meant for people with anxiety, depression, PTSD, as long as they have increased levels of distress. The idea is that if you would offer it to a big population, it wouldn't be good to do a diagnosis. That takes a lot of time of a clinician. It's much better if you can just take your K10, for example, your very brief screening instrument out, and you can include people based on a simple score on that screening instrument. And it's open. Well, important thing is that it's really open access available. There is no way of commercial companies being involved here to deliver it. There's also a child and adolescent version for children for 10 to 14 years old. That's called EASE. That's also available. And step-by-step digital version, which is the online version of or the desktop and smartphone version of PM Plus. So very briefly, PM Plus consists of a number of evidence-based strategies, mainly taken from CBT. It's stress management, so breathing exercises for people to manage their stress. Problem-solving skills, problem management, so people are asked to make a distinction in their daily problems. It's very much about the here and now. There is no focus on trauma in PM Plus, but it's focused on addressing problems that people can solve, solvable problems. They can think of strategies to solve them. And for unsolvable problems, they could use the stress management strategies. Behavioral activation, because that is from several meta-analysis, but also from component analysis, has been shown to be the most effective component probably of the depression treatments. So that is an important element. Strengthening social supports, and so having people to map out the people in their area or in their vicinity that they could access for certain supports and for what supports, so that they could really see where they can access friends or other people who can help them. And then people are helped to think of strategies for relapse prevention, to stay well. PM Plus is very scalable. It's trained to people in 8 days, to lay people. But of course, people also need to be trained to be trainers. So we also have a training of trainers, and that is we train psychologists and psychotherapists, psychiatrists even, in 5 days to deliver the training to other people. And then they are also supervisors. They provide a weekly supervision of once a week, mostly. Of course, you can understand that what happens in reality, and now at the moment, PM Plus, it's one of the most well-researched interventions, scalable interventions. There has been a meta-analysis 2 years ago, and at that time there were already 22 randomized controlled trials on PM Plus. But of course, if it is scaled up in a large population, you will see a voltage drop. So people will be trained once, they forget about the training, supervision is too costly. So you would imagine that probably if you would scale it up in a big population, it would be much more problematic to maintain the original effects. The digital version of PM Plus does not contain the problem management skills, because that was really difficult to put into a digital format, because that requires a lot of interaction with a therapist. So that was taken out, and then the behavioral activation part was much more prominent in that one. Number of studies have been done already on PM Plus in Pakistan, in Kenya, among people affected by urban violence, females in Pakistan, people affected by terrorist attacks. And then the Syrian war started in 2011. Quickly after 2011 became a very big international crisis with a lot of other countries involved, and leading to a massive number of Syrians being displaced. Almost half of the entire population of Syria at one point in time was internally or externally displaced because of the war. In 2015, we thought, well, we now have this problem management plus strategy. Syrian war is in fact is a public mental health crisis. Of course, in the countries surrounding Syria, where there is not enough mental health care available for all these people, but also in countries in Europe, in high-income settings, we knew at that point in time that we didn't have enough Arabic-speaking psychologists and psychotherapists to provide treatment to all these Syrian people coming into the Netherlands and other countries. Because we know that we did a random population survey in the Netherlands on mental health symptoms, and we found that approximately 37% of Syrians actually meet the criteria for depression, 30% for anxiety disorder, any anxiety disorder, and 27% for post-traumatic stress disorder. So that is quite a lot. Of course, there's comorbidity, so there are people meeting criteria of all three, but that means that it's a high-risk population without good access to mental health care or any access. So that's when we designed the Strengths Project, of which I was a coordinator in the period of 2017-2022. And we conducted 8 parallel randomized controlled trials on the PM Plus, a big one in a refugee camp in Jordan, in Azraq refugee camp, where researchers from the University of New South Wales in Sydney went tent by tent to include people there in PM Plus or control, care as usual. Of course, you can understand that it is not that much in a refugee camp, but still. In Turkey, in Istanbul, we also carried out a group version of PM Plus. We examined that version in Sultanbeyli, a district in Turkey, where there were as many Syrian refugees in the entire Netherlands at that point in time. So to give you a little bit of an idea of how many people are there, living under very difficult circumstances, very small houses, insecure housing, quickly having to spend their whole budget there, because people who went fleeing from Syria in the beginning sometimes were able to buy a hotel room, go into a hotel, but quickly, of course, people dropped very quickly among below poverty lines, and children had to go working in textile factories, etc. So very sad situations. In the Netherlands and in Switzerland, we examined the individual version of PM Plus. We did some qualitative research first to see, well, what is the most appropriate version for implementing in the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, we have some smaller cities where a lot of Syrians live. And people said, well, I don't want the other Syrians to know that about my daily problems and about my past experiences as well. So in terms of stigma, people really preferred individual version. In Germany, it wasn't possible to implement PM Plus because in Germany there's very strict legislation around the involvement of lay people into psychotherapy. They have actually laws against that, so people have been punished for that. They had to appear for court when they would do task sharing, which is, well, which quite extreme. If you look, for example, at the evidence that was already available at that point in time from the UK with the IAPS program, showing that it's actually really helpful to have task sharing. But that's Germany. And then in Germany, in Egypt and in Sweden, we evaluated the digital version of PM Plus, step by step. So with all these partners, here you see some pictures of places where we implemented PM Plus in these years. And here an overview of the results of all these studies. So you see here the yellow is where we found that it was effective. We also found quite a high dropout from the digital version. It was not 80% or 70%, but it was more like 50%. It was a little bit better, but still there's quite a high dropout, which is definitely a disadvantage of an online intervention. We didn't find that, by the way, in the individual and in the group versions of PM Plus. But in the group versions, the problem there was that group meetings have to be scheduled. Everyone needs to be present, like 6 to 8 people, 2 facilitators. And sometimes people just can't come because they have to work. And if they don't go to work, they lose their jobs. So that is more important, right? So, of course, there was also not very high attendance at these group meetings always. Diluting the effects. So that's also good to keep in mind, to think about cost effectiveness, that if, of course, people can't come, or you need 2 facilitators, and by the way, group intervention took 2 hours instead of 1 hour, the question is, what is actually more cost effectiveness effective? Is it the individual or the group version? It's an empirical question, but important to think about, because in global mental health, in refugee care, people automatically think that people should be treated in groups. I don't completely understand why, and I'm also not always in favor of that, but it's not a necessity. You can also think of individual face-to-face interventions for refugee and migrant populations. You see here also that some of the studies that are not showing any effect, for example, Switzerland had only 54 people. It was really difficult in Switzerland at the end to recruit people. Syrian refugees in Switzerland were not just coming into the country, for example, by foot, as in the Netherlands, but they were invited into the country. And at one point in time, that invitation program stopped. And then our colleagues had big troubles to find enough Syrians for the project, which obviously was not the case in Jordan, where we had very high numbers, and in Turkey. Overall positive results, but with some inconsistencies. We also have a big study from Lebanon that was not a study in Strengths Project. It was a study that was done by the Ministry of Public Health in Lebanon. They implemented step by step, but we were able to get their data as well, also the individual patient data, because it was really similar to what we did in the strength studies. The only difference in Lebanon is that they had a guided version of step-by-step. So they offered weekly a contact with a helper, a lay helper as well, another refugee, which wasn't done in Germany, Egypt and Sweden, where there was only contact on demand. So people could press a button and they could ask for a contact with a helper. But in reality, they didn't do that. So in fact, that was an unguided version of step-by-step. And we see here also that the Lebanese version was much more effective, actually. All right. Actually, I was starting this presentation thinking yesterday evening, I thought, okay, well, we have this really beautiful big data set because we could combine all these data of all these Syrian refugees, but now I saw your data set. So I would have to be more... That humility, I have to be, I'm being a little bit more realistic. Indeed, we could, because all these studies were done with the same, also all randomized controlled trials with more or less the same outcome measures, except that the Lebanese used slightly different outcome measures, but we were still able to transform them. We found that overall we had also, quite similar to your study actually, small effect sizes in terms of small to medium to reducing distress, depression, anxiety, and improving functioning. For PTSD, we didn't find very convincing results. It was significant, but the effect is very small. And we did find also a positive effect on self-identified problems. So we asked people, well, what's your most important problem? Can be anything, can also be a very practical problem. And then at the post-assessment, we ask again for that specific problem. So this is an instrument also addressing a little bit the cultural problems in asking only for depression and anxiety. However, we did find differences between the types of interventions. So it did make a difference whether people received individual PM Plus or group PM Plus. Basically, group PM Plus did worse than both individual PM Plus and step by step. There was not a difference between individual PM Plus and step by step, which is really positive for this online version, but group EM plus did quite worse compared to those. So if you look at the effect sizes for PM plus individual, you find the effect size of 0.46, and then it's getting much better, actually. So PM plus individual has a medium effect size, where PM plus group, for example, at 3 months doesn't show any effectiveness anymore. And for step by step, it's in the middle, so it's more like a small effect size. But of course, other important question that we could answer with this data set of only Syrian refugees was that we could look at what works best for whom. And that's very relevant in terms of precision medicine. Could we maybe target only the people having real benefits of the intervention? Well, we found that people with a higher education had better outcomes of any of these interventions, PM plus or step by step, which you can imagine, right? If people are more highly educated, they may be a little bit more motivated, maybe a little bit more able to arrange to go to these sessions. Maybe they have also other jobs, other types of jobs, better socioeconomic situation. There are all kinds of variables or correlates of that that could be associated with better outcomes for an intervention. Also, I think in line with what you found, and which is also quite a robust finding across interventions, is that people with a probable depression at baseline, or anxiety, or PTSD, had much better outcomes than people without. And actually, what we found is that people without that scoring above these cutoffs of any of these three disorders, they actually had an adverse effect of PM+. So people being offered PM+, but without the depression, anxiety disorder, or PTSD, they fared worse, so they should not get PM+. We did not find any effects for gender, for age, for marital status, for work status, for traumatic events that people had experienced, and also not for post-migration living difficulties. So when people are quite highly traumatized with PTSD, they still had positive effects, which was really counterintuitive for people working as specialized, like psychiatrists in the refugee mental health care that we talked with. They said, well, refugees, per definition, should get very specialized treatment. And I think that's a problematic assumption based on the evidence that we present. Also because in the Netherlands, waiting lists at the moment for specialized treatments are 1.5 years. So it's really not ethical to say that, I think. Then second, public health crisis. Of course, you all remember, we don't talk about it much more. This morning we talked a little bit about it, the pandemic, COVID pandemic. And that is when we thought, okay, now we have another situation. We have this pandemic, we have vulnerable populations, people are not really accessing mental health care, people are very distressed, people are being exposed to uncertainties, they may lose their jobs, their income, their livelihood, they may be directly exposed to the virus, they have to isolate themselves, etc. So that was quite a stressful period. And of course, it was difficult to for people to get access to mental health care because a lot of facilities were closed. So we thought, well, maybe we can deliver Problem Management Plus to people here. We just screen people with a K10. Everyone with a score of 15 or higher than 15 can access it, Problem Management Plus, but then remotely, so on Zoom or on Teams. But we will do it in a stepped care format. So we think maybe it's a little bit too short, only PM+. Let's also use another tool that WHO developed, which is called Doing What Matters in Times of Stress. This is a self-help booklet that you can also download from the internet. And it's meant for people who are under ongoing stress. So it's really to manage daily stress with, for example, mindfulness exercises, unhooking, being kind to yourself. It consists of 5 sessions. They're online modules accompanied by a very brief phone call of only 15 minutes that's mainly focused on, did you look at the intervention? Did you access it? Can I help you with anything? Do you have questions about it? So very low level. And that was also done by a lay person. We did 5 parallel randomized controlled trials during the COVID pandemic. We selected 4 populations that we thought were at risk for increased mental health symptoms. Healthcare staff, obviously, We recruited them in Spain, university in Madrid, and also in Barcelona. Recruited them from Madrid and Barcelona. Refugees and migrants in Italy, in Verona and in Rome. People with unstable housing here by the team of Maria Melchior did a big trial among mostly homeless people with a migrant background here in Paris. And we conducted a study in Polish labor migrants. Well, you think, why Polish labor migrants? Well, Polish labor migrants is a very big group in the Netherlands. They're very, probably also in France, I would imagine. But they also had very were very affected by the COVID pandemic because they are usually living on these holiday parks. They have these small houses. They live with a lot of people in one room. They couldn't leave. They couldn't really isolate themselves. So they were at a much higher risk of getting COVID. Borders were closed for some time, so they couldn't visit their family at home in Poland, something they usually do a lot. So they really felt very stressed. And it's also a very understudied population in the Netherlands, and by the way, in the whole world. So, briefly, results of our study, we found quite good effects. You see here these lines. The orange, the yellow line is the intervention group, significantly decreasing over time. You see already at T2, that is when they only got DWM, so they only had the app. Already you see that there is a significant effect, a significant drop in symptoms, but that actually was maintaining until 6 months follow-up. Whereas, for example, you see also that for distress, it sort of stabilized after that, after the T3. We did not find any significant effects on post-traumatic stress symptoms, but this was also not a trauma-exposed sample, I have to say. So not a lot of people actually were affected by traumatic events, more with daily living difficulties. However, still, most of the people that received DWM actually had to step up to PM+. So still, even though their symptoms improved over time, almost 90% of them actually were still qualifying, still scoring above the cutoff to receive PM+. So this is also a little bit sobering. But then they actually went on to improve symptoms. And then in terms of the adherence, most of the people, well, we say completer is when you complete at least 3 out of the 5 modules, and that was the case for 77% of people. So it's not too bad. Here are the results of the other 3 trials. You see that, for example, in Spain, actually, they had quite high effect sizes. They had effect sizes of 0.8. And then you come into the area of specialized mental health care. I think if you look at depression treatments, PTSD treatments, usually the effect sizes are about 0.8, 0.6. But that was actually found in Spain with the stepped care program. Also in Italy, good outcomes, particularly at 3 months, which was our main outcome time point. Here in France, also positive, significant findings, a little bit less clearly for the DWM intervention, which is also an intervention. Of course, you can imagine that people who are homeless in Paris, maybe just arrived 1 week before, and digital online intervention is probably not the best way to address symptoms, and maybe a person that you can talk to in your own language that understands what you're going through is so much better. And you see there that the real effects started to take place after they were offered PM+. Right, Maria? Checking with you, it's your results, so feel it. Yeah, exactly. Yes, so concluding, the WHO scalable interventions, they're effective for populations affected by adversity. There are improvements on multiple outcomes, depression, anxiety, functional impairment, even PTSD for Syrian refugees in the Netherlands. There was only in the Netherlands we found a significant effect. But we do need further improvements to boost the effectiveness. And personally, I don't think that there is a magic bullet to say, okay, this is the improvement and that will solve the effectiveness. I think we really need to, in the mental health field, we need to think about adding modules, adding certain components, maybe removing certain components, For example, a colleague in Verona, Davide Papola, he just finished his Marie Curie fellowship, and he did a really nice individual patient data meta-analysis where he combined the individual data of all task-sharing studies that he could access. Also, the strength studies are included in that. And he made a taxonomy of the components of these interventions, and he found that most evident, the parts that were mostly contributing to the effects of task-sharing interventions are social support, accessing social support, problem-solving, but not stress management. Actually, it had an adverse effect. So maybe we have to get rid of the relaxation exercises for a next version. So that is asking some really fine-tuning. We ourselves also made a trauma module for young refugees based on registered data in the Netherlands with the Central Bureau of Statistics. We found that particularly among young refugees, there was quite a high prevalence or at least diagnosis in mental health care made for young refugees on PTSD and anxiety disorders. So we thought, well, let's also add a module on PTSD, on talking about the traumatic events. It's not currently included. And we did do a pilot RCT with that, and we found that probably it does have an additional effect. So it's a little bit better than the regular version of PM+. And also colleagues from the London School of Hygiene Tropical Medicine, Bayard Roberts and Daniela Fur, they made also a module for alcohol use for Ukrainians. They're almost done in testing that in Uganda, but also in Ukraine, among civilians there. So there's a lot to be done. Also, another really interesting thing to further boost these scalable interventions in terms of effectiveness and also uptake is to also use digital tools to, for example, maybe replace the helper in step by step so that it can be automated, maybe using a chatbot with some human oversight, of course, in the beginning, because we really need to check whether that's safe. But still, I think that would be interesting to add here. A lot of people are already working on that. Of course, a lot of people are already talking with AI about their mental health. For example, my son, he is a student. He has one of his best friends, talks to AI the entire day from morning to evening. I don't think that's very healthy, but I said that, but okay. So people are already doing it. So I do think that somehow it addresses a certain need, and we need to step into that market as well to make sure that it's going to be safe and it's going to be ethical and effective. But you can also think about assisting, for example, helpers. So I talked about, well, people are trained one point in time somewhere in an African country. They conduct these sessions over the years. And then you see usually voltage drop. People forget about these strategies. And in order to maintain quality and to maintain fidelity to the original treatment, it would be good to maybe use chatbots. And a colleague in Liverpool, Atif Rahman, he did this really beautiful study. It was published last year in Nature, where he evaluated a chatbot to help these lay people to deliver PM+, with all kinds of examples and advice, etc. And he found that it didn't only improve the fidelity and also the quality, but it directly improved the outcomes of the intervention. So he also found a significant effect in the people receiving this intervention. It was not PM+, by the way. It was the Thinking Healthy program for perinatal depression. We have to examine effective implementation strategies because I'm so impressed by your work, and I think we also need to go that way with PM+. We really need to scale up massively. We were just funded in the Netherlands to implement PM+ in the four biggest cities in the Netherlands, Rotterdam, Amsterdam, The Hague and Utrecht, where actually already quite a lot of implementation efforts are taking place. So people are taking it up. Usually it takes 17 years before an intervention goes from research to practice. We do a little bit better, fortunately. So it landed well, but now we're looking at massive scale up. And also what we're interested in is to really improve the way you can examine outcomes of implementation efforts. For example, we can, of course, use all these frameworks like REAIM, CFIR to examine the efforts of our implementation. But we can also do some routine outcome monitoring. We can really all use the same outcome measures. Well, I already noticed that you use the same outcome measures as we, so we can already share together some data. But we are currently constructing a big joint database. It's called JoinMind, to combine all these routine outcome measures across settings worldwide of NGOs also implementing these scalable interventions, so that we can also look at predictors for treatments and really do some precision medicine. And finally, to round off, I said already about chatbots. Other potential things that people are focused on at the moment in the digital mental health field is also, for example, ecological monetary interventions. So you ask people multiple times a day to ask about their mood. I would think it's very boring, but okay, people do answer that sometimes. And then when people suddenly get a little bit more stressed, then they are offered a very brief intervention to address that. But sometimes also people say, okay, well, people won't, if they're really distressed, they're not going to answer it. So we may have to give them a wristwatch and we're just going to assess it. So I have also colleagues at my university doing that. That is one area things are going into. And maybe you think, okay, well, is that really practical? I think people are really interested in that. I have, even in my private life, I have a friend walking around, friends with these wristwatches all the time, looking at their stress. So I do think that people find that really attractive to do that. So I think they would also like some information when, well, their stress levels are high. So I see definitely opportunities there. And single session interventions. So a lot of people only do one session. They're not actually doing more than one. So why not just evaluate the effects of a single session intervention if that is in reality what people get? And there are already some evidence that sometimes single sessions are enough. So, of course, I have not done this work all by myself, and I would like to thank all my collaborators working with me. I hope I didn't forget someone. And thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.